Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com. I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, I just wanted to mention real quick in the what we've been doing section, I've been preparing for Hurricane Milton, which as we're recording this is about to hit Florida. Thankfully, I'm not in any sort of like real danger in like a big part of the state where the hurricane is going to hit. I think a lot of people are. So my heart goes out to them. I hope everybody evacuated when they were supposed to and all that. It seems like it's going to be a pretty serious storm this time around. So anyway, there is the possibility that I lose power and stuff like that. So I just wanted to mention it at the top of the show in case we end up not having episodes, I don't know, tomorrow and potentially Friday as well. Like that's probably why. So hopefully all will go well. I think I'm well outside the main path of everything, but just wanted to throw that in up top just in case. So, all right, let's get into what we've been reading. I read a book over my little vacation called The Library at Mount Char by Scott Hawkins. This book came out in 2015. It was his debut novel. And this is the most just drops you straight in book that I think I've ever read, to the point where it was a little disorienting at the beginning. Like the story is about this 20 something year old woman named Carolyn, who was raised by this mysterious deity type of figure on Earth in a really sleepy little suburban neighborhood. And there's some kind of spell over the area, so no one thinks that they're doing anything weird, but really there's this secret library in this neighborhood house where Carolyn and her siblings are each taught very specific skills by their overbearing, sort of domineering deity father figure. Like one kid is taught the skills of war, and one person learns how to commune with the dead, and Carolyn studies every single language that's ever existed. And the story is about what happens when that deity figure mysteriously disappears and this power vacuum forms, and a couple of humans stumble across this secret family. So very interesting book. I can't really explain this, but I wonder if you've ever had anything like this, Brad, where like there's something about fantasy books specifically that makes me approach them with my arms crossed a little bit. Like, who the hell do you think you are making up some magical rules for your universe? You know, like I think more than any other genre, I find that like as a reader, fantasy authors really have to prove themselves to me before I can fully buy into the stories that they're telling. And ultimately that's what ended up happening with this book. The writing was good enough to keep pulling me along, and I eventually got pretty into it. But is that a familiar feeling for you? Do you feel like that? And maybe part of it's because I'm an editor and I spend all day, you know, reading people's writing and stuff. But do you ever have anything like that at all?
I don't think so, really. I mean, like maybe just like a little bit as far as just like, you know, constantly judging the world building and how it comes together, you know. But and a lot of that kind of just comes from like having favorites, you know, like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and whatnot, and seeing how new fantasy worlds measure up to them and if they're doing the same kind of thing that like, you know, you like to see in those kinds of stories. So, but yeah, otherwise I'm not like, all right, let's see what you got, fantasy book.
Because sometimes like fantasy authors will just make up words and like, you know, they'll make up technologies and stuff. And I'm just, there's something about that where I'm just like, you got some balls on you, sir or madam, to completely, you know, generate this thing. I mean, it's a silly thought because every story is like generated out of thin air, and this is just a branch of that. But anyway,
you're not like that with movies, are you?
No, not really. Not at all. So yeah, I don't know. Anyway, this is a unique story. I'm glad I read it. It's called The Library at Mount Char. What have you been reading, Brad?
So I read The Art of Marvel Studios' What If, and I like to check out these art books that come from various, you know, productions when they get released to find out some cool behind the scenes details. And I gotta say, this one was actually fairly disappointing. I was hoping that there were going to be interesting details about like things that they like didn't include, or like, you know, alternate paths that they could have taken with certain episodes or characters and stuff like that. But like a lot of the behind the scenes stuff was just like very repetitive and talking about like the development process and just very basic kind of stuff about what people say when they join a project and how excited they were and all that stuff. It was a little bit more than like publicity fluff, but it also was just very basic thing. The most fascinating thing was that one of the people talked about like the process of like drawing and character designs and how like they went through it. And so that was particularly interesting to me. But otherwise, there weren't really a lot of engaging details for me to be interested in. Like, and with these books, honestly, like, usually the big draw is getting a chance to see all the cool concept art and stuff like that. And there's plenty of cool images and stuff like that about how they figured out the character designs and different versions and just like, you know, beautiful art for the series. But otherwise, the details from the making of the show left quite a lot to be desired.
That's unfortunate. Okay, so that book is called The Art of Marvel Studios What If. It sounds like that's one of your least favorite in a while in terms of these art of type of books.
But yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into what we've been watching. What have you been watching recently, Brad?
So I watched a new documentary that's on Paramount Plus called Casa Bonita, Mi Amor. And that is a documentary that is about Trey Parker and Matt Stone of South Park fame buying the famous Casa Bonita Mexican restaurant in Denver, Colorado, and renovating it and reopening it after it closed down due to COVID and never really came back. This is a very famous restaurant, especially because they did an entire episode where Cartman was very excited to go to Casa Bonita, but also because even before that, in the 70s and 80s, this was a huge tourist attraction and still was really up until it closed. That is just this big like Mexican restaurant that they call the Disneyland of restaurants. It's massive. It's like the size of a huge shopping center, and inside it has like games and like a little mini attractions for kids and like characters you know, acting out scenes and cliff divers jumping off rock formations into this pool. it's a crazy like setup for a restaurant. And Trey Parker has a real affinity for it. Like, he grew up and he went to it and he loved it when he was a kid, and so he really wanted to bring it back and like capture what was so great about it originally, not like completely revamp it and not overhaul it, but just give it like return it back to its roots with some like modern, you know, touches to it. And when they get in there and you see the state of this restaurant, it is bonkers how this place was still running. They were anticipating spending like $6.5 million on it, and I won't give it away because it's interesting to see how it kind of like unfolds and stuff like that, but needless to say, the cost balloons to a much higher amount, and when you see the kind of work they have to do, it's just crazy. But like, it's also fun to see Trey Parker and Matt Stone in this element and like doing something completely different than South Park, because like it's a different kind of fun for them, and you get to see them, you know, coming up with different ideas. And Trey's like really specific about what he wants to see from the performers at in the various shows and stuff like that. You get to see him and Matt Stone kind of goofing around because they do the voices of these animatronic skeleton characters that are like just throughout the day constantly talking about like a cave and like, oh, don't go in there. And so like it's just a really, really interesting documentary. Just like, if you like Trey Parker and Matt Stone and you don't really know anything about Casa Bonita, it's really cool to watch, you know, just learn about the history and then see how they revamped it and reopened it.
Amazing. Okay, so that's Casa Bonita, Mi Amor, which is on Paramount Plus right now. What else have you been watching?
I also watched Snack Shack. Have you seen Snack Shack, Ben?
I have, yes. This was the second Gabriel LaBelle movie that I saw after The Fablemans, and I was very impressed by just how completely 180 those two performances are. And I worked in a snack bar at my local pool for a couple summers while I was in college and maybe even late high school. So I related to this probably a little bit more than I should have.
That's fun. I watched this actually after I had seen Saturday Night, and I'm realizing just right now, as I was thinking about that I haven't yet talked about Saturday Night on this podcast. I haven't gotten a chance to, so I will also do that here in a moment. But yes, Snack Shack stars Gabriel LaBelle, who also plays Lorne Michaels in the new Saturday Night Live movie. And yeah, it's this great, it's that kind of coming of age movie that just hits my sweet spot about this pair of teenage friends who are working at this like pool snack shop in Nebraska City in like the early 90s. But it has because it's so close to the 80s, it also kind of has like an 80s vibe to it too. It's kind of an interesting combination of the two bits of nostalgia for those decades. And it follows two friends, and Gabriel LaBelle is the one who's like, he's kind of like a rascal, a bit of an asshole. And then you have his friend, who's played by Connor Sherry, and he's kind of the lead, and he's the more awkward one, kind of trying to figure things out. And he has a crush on this girl who's staying next door for the summer. And it has all the, you know, the standard things you expect from a movie like this. You know, you have the conflict that comes up with the friends, you're going to parties and all that stuff. But the one thing that I was surprised by is, in addition to that, there's a surprising dose of heart and drama that I was not expecting towards the end of this movie that kind of comes out of nowhere. But it actually still really, really worked for me. So I came away really enjoying this movie. And man, I'm so excited to watch Gabriel LaBelle's career. I get kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio vibes from him a little bit. Although it seems like maybe he's having like a little bit more, fun like with his roles, and he doesn't seem, you know, quite as serious as Leonardo DiCaprio, and I mean that in like a very complimentary way. Mm-hmm. Not that that's necessarily a detriment to like who Leonardo DiCaprio is, but like he just has kind of a different vibe about him. So yeah, if you haven't seen Snack Shack, it's streaming on Amazon Prime now, and it's definitely worth watching.
Excellent. Okay, what else have you been checking out?
I watched Blown Away. Have you ever seen Blown Away, Ben?
Is this the Boston bomber movie with Jeff Bridges?
You know it!
Yes, I have seen this. Yeah, I think my dad really liked this movie, so I watched it a handful of times growing up. Yeah,
this movie is decent. This movie and the next movie I'm actually going to talk about, it's the kind of action thriller that has unfortunately gone by the wayside in recent years because mid-budget movies don't really get made a lot anymore, and these are the kinds of like cat and mouse movies that were very prominent. Like we would get like two or three of them a year, at least, especially back in the 90s. And unfortunately, there aren't a lot of them anymore. And so this one is directed by Stephen Hopkins, who would later go on to direct a little movie you might have heard about called Lost in Space.
Oh, wow.
Jeff Bridges plays a guy who works for the bomb squad in Boston. Tommy Lee Jones plays this guy who's basically a terrorist who is threatening to blow up places around Boston, and he's slowly taking out members of Jeff Bridges' team. You find out that they have a history, and it's just kind of like the unfolding tension and drama. I will say, I think to its detriment, the romantic side of the story, Jeff Bridges involving like the woman that he has a relationship with or whatnot, feels kind of forced and weird. But the way that they craft the tension of the scenes where like they're trying to defuse bombs and stuff like that is incredibly well done. And like, that's the real driving force of the movie. The dynamic between Jeff Bridges and Tommy Lee Jones isn't bad, but it's marred a little bit by the fact that they're both putting on not so great accents. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges is doing his Boston accent and Tommy Lee Jones is doing an Irish accent. And it just doesn't really come together. And
yeah.
but otherwise it was a solid action thriller. I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, it's like this is what I think of when I think about like the movies that were just constantly playing on TNT back in the day. It's like a classic one of those that you would just, you know, lounge around on a lazy Sunday or something and throw on in the background kind of movie.
Yeah. So similarly, I also watched In the Line of Fire for the first time, which is a Wolfgang Peterson movie from 1993 starring Clint Eastwood and John Malkovich in a very similar cat and mouse situation where Clint Eastwood plays a member of the Secret Service who was around when JFK was assassinated. And he kind of like, you know, blames himself for not being able to stop it. And then John Malkovich plays this insane guy who has officially like threatened to kill the current president, which is not a real president. It's just a person playing the president. Mm-hmm. And so it's a back and forth of like John Malkovich threatening and Clint Eastwood trying to track him down. And Clint Eastwood is being Clint Eastwood. You know, he's being a little bit of a smart ass and a rebel. And there's like kind of like an old school romance dynamic between his character and Rene Russo's character. And it's a little odd because she's like 23 years younger than he is. And it's just like, oh, I don't know about that, Clint Eastwood. Maybe slow your roll a little bit. Cause he like kind of like openly, you know, hits on her on the job. And I guess that's kind of like, you know, what romance in movies, you know, was like a lot, but like, I feel like in this line of work, it's just like, this is kind of uncomfortable. but like Dylan McDermott is also in it as this young new Secret Service agent that Clint Eastwood kind of mentored. Gary Cole is in it in a role that you might be surprised to see him in after knowing all of the comedic stuff he does. But he also plays like a Secret Service agent who kind of acts as one of Clint Eastwood's bosses. But yeah, this one is fantastic, actually. And I was surprised to see that this was actually nominated for a few Academy Awards, including John Malkovich for supporting actor and even best screenplay.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it's really good. What's interesting about it, and I kind of realized this at the time, is in the 90s, there weren't a lot of movies that you were using actors like Clint Eastwood in roles like this, because we're talking about like the big, you know, macho action movie era with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and Jean-Claude Van Damme. And so I wonder if this got a lot of attention at the time because it was taking Clint Eastwood and putting him in like this kind of action thriller role, even though he's this guy who's in his mid 60s by this point. And that kind of like made it feel like a different kind of action movie at the time.
Yeah, in my memory, it's much more grounded than a lot of the stuff that was going on.
From yeah, those absolutely. Other guys. Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, I remember Malkovich just being like absolutely deranged in that movie. So
yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, excellent stuff there. Okay, so that's called In the Line of Fire. How did you watch that one again?
That one I had to rent digitally because it wasn't streaming anywhere.
Okay, yeah, it's definitely worth checking out if you're a fan of classic dad cinema, I would say.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, what else have you been watching?
I also watched Oddity, which is a new horror movie from Shudder that is also available to rent digitally if you want to watch it. It's an Irish horror film. And I honestly don't really want to say anything about the story because I was able to go into it blind and not really know anything other than it was getting some pretty good acclaim after it played South by Southwest earlier this year and heard a lot of people talking about it after seeing it. So I won't really say anything about what the plot is about, but it's a definitely a different kind of horror film that you're not used to seeing. It's one of the more original concepts I've seen in a while. It has like it's not a typical slasher. It's not like a monster movie. There's a little bit of supernatural to it, but it also has like kind of somewhat of a fantasy vibe to it in a way. But it's just really good. There's a lot of tension in it. There's a couple interesting twists and turns that it takes, but I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, some excellent filmmaking there. Really, really small scale, high tension movie. If you're interested in learning more about the making of that film, go back in our archives because we featured an interview with the director a couple months ago. So the movie is Oddity. It's streaming on Shudder right now. What else do you watch, Brett?
I also watched a new Netflix movie called It's What's Inside, and I believe you've probably talked about this on the podcast before because I know you interviewed the director about it, and man, this movie is awesome.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
It's so cool, and like it takes a while to kind of like get used to what's going on because it's confusing trying to keep track of the characters, but one of the things that's great about it is they did such a good job of with the visuals and how they shot it and just really interesting techniques to remind you like who is who, because so this movie is it's like Bodies, 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 but with this like mind fuck of a body swap sci-fi spin on it where all these friends are together for this reunion before one of their friends' weddings. And one of their kind of shadier friends who they don't really know what he's been up to for a while brings in this suitcase with a machine in it that allows them to take each other's consciousness and switch it into each other's bodies. And so then they play like a game where they try to figure out who is inside whose body. But of course, some things go awry. And the funny thing is I was not expecting that big thing to happen because I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just thinking about the dynamic of like what it's like between the characters and their interaction, the tension. I wasn't even thinking about a certain plot development. And then when that happened, I was like, oh my God, what the fuck? And it's just so much fun. There are so many twists and turns. And the visual style was so cool too. It was almost like if Edgar Wright directed an A24 movie. There's some really clever like editing tricks and like just it has a very distinct style and a great use of color. I really like this movie a lot.
Yes, it's What's Inside. It's streaming on Netflix right now. Highly, highly recommend, especially for October, especially for this time of year. It's kind of the perfect like lean into early Halloween kind of stuff. If you're, you know, if you want to watch like some more horror flavored stuff as you get close to the actual holiday, this is like a really good movie to kind of kickstart that experience, I would say. So, all right. So Brad, you mentioned Saturday night, and I think if all goes according to plan and I retain power at my house, you and I are going to do a whole episode devoted to this movie, this coming Friday. Cause that's when it opens wide. I think it's in limited release right now. So, maybe save some of that for that podcast episode, but yeah, just give me some brief reactions to Saturday night.
Yeah. So basically I'll just say, I saw this movie back at the Toronto International Film Festival in September. I've actually seen it twice. Cause I had a press screening like myself before I went up to TIFF to do interviews with Jason Reitman and Gil Keenan and some of the cast. And I'm a huge Saturday Night Live fan, diehard Saturday Night Live fan. I review new episodes on Slash Film. I've kept up with it for such a long time. I'm just a big SNL nerd. And so I was so excited to see this movie. And I'll just say it was exactly what I hoped and dreamed an SNL movie like this would be. It's packed with energy. It moves so fast. It's really funny. The way Jason Reitman like weaves the camera throughout this, set, which they built as like, that has no edge of frame. So it's just a full recreation of Studio 8H from 1975. And, it's just, everyone's fantastic in it. There's a huge ensemble. And everyone does an incredible job of portraying the people from the cast to Gabriel LaBelle as Lorne Michaels. There's just so much stuff in here, and I just came away absolutely loving it, wanting more, because it's pretty breezy. It's only like an hour and 40 minutes or so, and it's just absolutely fantastic. I think right now it's probably my favorite movie of the year, and so if you haven't seen it yet, it's going to be in wide release this weekend, so finally playing everywhere, and I could not encourage you more to go see it.
Awesome. Yeah, if my local theater is open, yeah, hopefully the stars will align. I'll be able to see this, and then we can talk about it more in detail on Friday. So stay tuned for that, hopefully. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll be right back. Okay, I rewatched The Shining because when my wife and I went to Montana recently for our hiking trip to Glacier National Park, there was a section of that park that is part of the area where they filmed the beginning of The Shining, like the opening shot where the cameras, this big helicopter shot, like zooming over the water, and there's this little island and there's giant mountains on both sides. We went to that spot. We didn't actually go to that tiny island, but we were on the road where Jack Torrance is driving, you know, along the mountainside and everything. So we wanted to rewatch The Shining because we were just in that area and just compare and contrast. Oh my God, it's just gorgeous to watch. And I forgot like how great The Shining looks. I mean, everybody talks about it being this legendary horror movie for good reason. It's the performances are incredible, and there's just so much famous sort of iconic imagery in that thing. But I forgot how amazing it feels like when we turned it on, even just at home on our flat screen TV or whatever, it felt like the moment in The Dark Knight when the image comes on the screen for the first time and it takes up the full frame. And it's just like, oh my God, it kind of like took my breath away how incredible the picture was. So I watched it on Max. I don't know, maybe there's something about the transfer or something like that, but highly recommend giving The Shining another go around because it's just a great movie, man. When was the last time you watched that, Brad?
It's been a little while, but not too long. It's been a long time since I've actually sat down and watched the full thing because I'll usually catch like bits and pieces on TV, which is probably the worst way to watch it. but you know, when you've seen it several times, you know, it's fine because you know the stuff that like has been cut out and you still know what the movie is. But yeah, it's been a while since I've sat down and watched the full movie. So I'm probably overdue to do that soon.
Chris and I were talking about, documentary, I believe it's called Wise Guys, which is about David Chase and the making of The Sopranos recently. And there's a moment in that documentary where David Chase talks about how the ending of The Sopranos, the famous ending of where it cuts to black, where it kind of basically like loops back around, encourages you, if you're looking for answers about the meaning of the show, it encourages you to loop back around to the beginning and like start the show again, because like, if it just ended that way, there must be some sort of clue in there that I was missing, or there must be, you know, something. It's kind of like he explains how he kind of designed the show like that, or designed the ending to be that way.
Interesting.
And that's what it reminds me of, The Shining, but like the way that movie ends, like with Jack Torrance, you know, in that photo at the very end of the movie, I'm kind of like, what? That doesn't really make sense to me. I don't understand. Like, how literally does this work? And there are no answers. And it just kind of encourages you to go back and rewatch it again and try to pick up different details and stuff like that. So anyway, The Shining, classic, great stuff. All right. I also saw the movie Wolfs, which is streaming on Apple TV Plus right now. This is the Brad Pitt, George Clooney movie where they both play fixers. John Watts, the guy who did most of the recent Spider-Man films, wrote and directed this. Have you seen Wolfs yet, Brad?
No, not yet.
It's only okay. You know, it's fun watching Brad Pitt and George Clooney. Those guys are just like, you know, they have it, you know, they're just movie stars that I've grown up with for practically my entire adult life. And just seeing them, there's a comfort in that. But I don't know, the movie's just okay. I wish it had a little bit more juice. I wish it had a little bit more like something to say, you know. It kind of just felt like, oh, we're two old guys. It's like a, I don't know, it's a trailer movie, if that makes any sense. Like, you kind of get everything that you need to get from the movie from the trailer. I don't know if that's a term, but anyway, Austin Abrams is really good in it. He has popped up in a couple things. He was in like Euphoria and The Walking Dead, and he's been in a couple movies here and there. I want to say he was in like Kings of Summer back in the day, which I really enjoyed, but he really holds his own against those two guys in this film. And Amy Ryan plays a small role, and she's always great to watch. So it's not without its pleasures, but it just kind of felt a little like, really? We got everybody together here, and this is all we got out of this? So it's like a fun, you know, a fun way to kill a couple hours or whatever, but it just, I wish that there was a little bit more juice to it. So that's Wolfs on Apple TV Plus. I also saw Megalopolis, which is pretty much the exact opposite in terms of like, you know, Wolfs, there's like nothing to it. Megalopolis, there's way too much to it. So did you see this one yet?
No, not yet. I was going to see it last week, and then like the reactions kind of put me off. I still want to see it just because it feels like it needs to be seen. And so I might try to see it this week.
Yeah, ultimately, I'm glad that I saw it. But man, this, it just kind of feels psychotic. You know, it just it really feels like, what the hell am I watching? There were moments where I felt like I was disassociating in the theater. I was just like, I cannot believe what I'm watching here. And it's not even that it's so deranged or like the ideas are so out there that my mind was blown or anything like that. It's more like, I can't believe these decisions were made to get these images and these performances on the screen that I'm watching right now. Like, more power to Francis Ford Coppola for spending $120+ million of his own money to make this. And I encourage all super rich people to fund their own passion projects because it's so revealing and kind of an, it provides insight into their headspace that I find really valuable as a movie watcher. But like, I don't think I'm ever going to watch this movie again. It just, it doesn't feel like anything I've ever seen before. And sometimes that feels great. And sometimes that feels like energizing and where you're just like, oh my God, this is like this, it's breathing new life into what I thought was possible from this medium or whatever. And then sometimes it's just like, well, yeah, I haven't seen anything like this before because it's kind of a bad idea to make a movie this way. So part of it, it really reminded me of, or really made me feel that way. So Megalopolis, I saw it in a theater nearby my house and I was just like, well, I guess I'm glad that I watched this on the big screen and like supported this movie in some way, even though it bombed at the box office and is not going to be, it's not going to make his money back or anything like that. But it just kind of feels like a historic event that needs to be beheld in some fashion. So that's Megalopolis. A couple more things I wanted to mention. Have you ever heard of Over the Garden Wall?
I have. I'm aware of kind of its presence in pop culture and whatnot, but I've never taken the time to actually watch it.
I want to say HT mentioned it like years and years ago. And so I've always had it in the back of my mind. And when my wife and I were in Montana, we were in our Airbnb and we had some time to kill and we were just like, oh yeah, well, let's see if we can find something that has kind of a fall vibe to it, you know, an autumnal feeling to kind of get us into the season a little bit. And this show, which came out in 2014 on Cartoon Network, is pretty much exactly what we were looking for because it's 10 episodes and each of the episodes is only 11 minutes long. So it's a really, really short project to watch. And it has a tremendous voice cast. The part of the fun of the show is hearing a different character talk and being like, wait, is that this person? And you know, looking on IMDb or whatever and finding out that it is. So I'm not going to say who's in the show, really, except to say Elijah Wood plays one of the main characters and Melanie Lynskey plays one of the main characters as well. And if you're the type of person where me saying Elijah Wood and Melanie Lynskey provide voices in an animated show that feels like Autumn, if you're the type of person who's like, oh, that's interesting, you're definitely going to like this show, I think. It's just a really, really fun, intriguing sort of a fantasy type of series about these two kids who, these two brothers who get lost in a mysterious set of woods that are nearby their home, and they can't find their way home, and they just encounter all these different characters and creatures and stuff along the way as they're trying to discover their way home. So yeah, just a really, really fun little show with some terrific, terrific voice work. And I loved the look of the thing. Character designs are really awesome. So Over the Garden Wall is streaming on Hulu right now if you want to check that out. And then finally, I watched Interview with the Vampire for the first time, the 1994 movie starring Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. Have you ever seen this one?
No, I haven't actually.
Man, I had never seen this, and it's loomed so large in pop culture. There's a new show that's, I think, in its second season on AMC right now. So, like, this has been a thing that I could have tapped into at any point in my life and just never did for whatever reason. And I don't know. Once again, I'm glad I saw it, but, like, it didn't really do it for me, you know?
Yeah.
Tom Cruise plays a kind of a vampire who's like ravenous in some ways, where he just like wants to experience the richest things in life, and he, you know, loves killing people left and right, and just does not, he kind of like lives his life without his afterlife, as it were, without abandon. And Brad Pitt is a new vampire who is much more hesitant about killing people. He still has this sense of morality in him where he's like, he would rather kill animals and drink their blood instead of killing humans because he was a human so recently, but Tom Cruise is like hundreds of years old and all that. So it's an interesting dynamic between these two characters because Cruise plays the sort of mentor figure to Brad Pitt. I almost think that like both of them are miscast in this movie. And maybe not so much Tom Cruise being miscast, because there's something interesting about him playing this ravenous for culture, ravenous for food vampire. But I wish his character kind of went above and beyond what we actually got. Like, it seems like it would be more fun to watch him really get unhinged. And this movie itself is not super fun to watch, even though it has some stuff that on paper sounds like it should be fun. So anyway, I'm not going to go too much deeper into that, but again, a really good supporting cast in this one. Kirsten Dunst, I think this was her first movie, and she is great. She kind of like blows Cruise and Pitt off the screen, even though she's like 10 years old or something. So she was tremendous in this. And I just, Antonio Banderas has a small role in this too. Christian Slater shows up. So there's some good people in here, and the atmosphere is cool. But story-wise, it kind of didn't really do much for me, especially the ending. I was just kind of like, what the hell? That's the ending to this movie? So anyway, I would love to hear if we have any like hardcore Interview with the Vampire fans out there who watch this movie every year or like obsessed with it in some way, and would, you know, tell me that I'm wrong or anything. So send me an email if that's the case. So let's really quickly get into what we've been eating. I just want to give a quick shout out to a couple places that I ate in Montana. This place called North Fork Pizza, Mudman Burgers, Gunsight Saloon, and Himalayan Kitchen. So if you happen to be in the Columbia Falls area of Montana, check those places out. Good stuff there. What have you been eating, Brad?
So there's this is not a new flavor, but I, from what I understand, they redid like the formula, for it, and it's Steakhouse Onion Funyuns. They've basically taken Funyuns and they've given them a flavor similar to what like the Bloomin' Onion is at Outback Steakhouse, or the various Blossom fried onion appetizers you can get at different steakhouses. And the flavor isn't exactly like those kind of appetizers, but the seasoning they put on the Funyuns is actually really good. So I really dug them, and they're pretty delicious. So those should be available at various groceries across the country. Because it's Halloween, there's a new Mountain Dew Voodoo mystery flavor. This is the sixth time they have released one, and they have become exceedingly efficient at it. The Matrix Reloaded. And this is the flavor, because it's a mystery. You try and figure out what it is. And there's a very strong strawberry flavor to it, but I couldn't place what it was. It tastes very similar to strawberry Starburst. But the third voodoo flavor they did in 2021 was quote unquote fruit candy chews. And that was like understood to be the generic version of Starburst. So I don't think that they would go back to something so similar very soon. So I'm not entirely sure what it is, but there's definitely a strawberry flavor to it. So it'd be interesting to see what that turns out to be whenever they announce what the flavor is.
Okay.
So I think I've talked about this before, but there's a ton of these now, but this specific brand is called Just the Fun Part, and they are the bottom parts of ice cream cones, like drumsticks and stuff like that, where it's the bottom waffle cone with chocolate inside of it. Yeah, so those are popular everywhere now, and like there's tons of different brands, and there's a lot of more flavors now too. Just the Fun Part is the one who has the biggest variety of flavors, and one of their new ones is a PB&J flavor, where it has a peanut butter cream inside of it and jelly as well. It's a strawberry jelly. And these were pretty good. I think my only complaint was that I thought I wanted the jelly to be a little more soft, and it's like it's kind of chewy, almost in like a gummy kind of way. But the flavor is still very good, so I still liked it. And it's a very creamy peanut butter inside of it too, so it's not as firm as the chocolate you normally get in those cones. But they're good. So those are a little bit harder to track down unless you get them from the online shop, but I know they've been popping up at like TJ Maxx and Home Goods and stuff like that. So and then the last thing I'll mention is a new cookie butter cereal from the Great Value brand at Walmart. This is very similar to like a Cinnamon Toast Crunch or a Golden Grahams, but it has that Biscoff cookie butter flavor to it, and it is extremely good. I love cookie butter as a flavor. I love those Biscoff cookies that you get on airplanes, which is exclusively where they're available. Never are they ever available anywhere else. That's not true. You can find them easily in stores, but very famously they are on planes. And it's a great cereal, and it seems like it's limited edition. So if you haven't had it yet, try and track it down from Walmart, because it's very, very good if you are a fan of cookie butter and cereal. So yeah, get some of that.
Nice. Good combo there. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about a lot of what we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boys Forever Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers powerhouse protection with its stain-blocking, odor-reducing technology. And with Dutch Boys Easy Opening Smooth-Pouring Container, transforming your home has never been easier. View our entire selection of Dutch Boy paint on Menards.com. Plus the weekly flyer and other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.